And our group has asked Farah to be our main speaker tonight.
Hello, I'm Farah. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 17th of 2020. I have a sponsor who knows that she's my sponsor. I sponsor others, and I'm also available to sponsor. My home group meeting is a Tuesday night big book study or big book club meeting at 3333 at 7 p.m. It's been my home group for a while now, and I love it. Highly recommend if you're ever looking for a meeting on Tuesday to go there, but get there early because it's been getting packed lately. Thank you, Quentin, for sharing. It's really nice to see, like, when someone gets, you know, like, hyped up about getting through the steps and just working it to the best of your ability, you know, because I used to say in my story, like, when I first got into AA, like, I wanted to, right? Like, I was ready, like, I was willing to do all this, and I had totally forgot, you know, because as an alcoholic, I tend to forget the bad things sometimes, that, like, I didn't stop smoking weed for, like, the first month, and I didn't get honest with my sponsor about it, and once that happened, I was, you know, actually ready to do the steps, and from then, I was definitely willing and ready to do it to the best of my ability. So to start from the beginning, I was born in New York. We moved down to Florida when I was like 11 years old, so I've pretty much been here most of my life, I'd like to say. I have a twin brother and I have an older brother with special needs as well. When we were 18 months, my twin got a traumatic brain injury. So he had, like, both of my brothers grew up with, like, a lot of special attention. And that's something that my mom told me, right? Like, I always, you know, my perspective has changed a lot with that as well, is that I kind of chose, right? It was my decision from a young age to be like, okay, I have to take care of myself. Like, my parents have their hands full, so I'm not going to communicate about anything, right? Like, my feelings when I'm being bullied, like, any questions that I have, you know, like, sometimes I would even write letters to communicate to them, because that was just something that I felt would make me feel closer, you know? And none of these things, right, like, however I grew up and whatever impacted me, like, doesn't make me an alcoholic, you know? It just kind of came to a point for me where it was just, like, I picked up a drink and decided to, like, never really stop, you know? And I wouldn't say in the beginning that that was, like, the case for me, right? Like, I had my first drink when I was older, so I think I was, like, 16 or 17 years old. I honestly don't remember. And I was at Universal Studios. My cousins went to UCF, and we went back to, like, an apartment and, like, you know, had a party. And the first time I ever drank, it was, like, warm vodka with warm Gatorade, you know? And I was just like, I don't really see the appeal, right? Like, I didn't get the effects. Like, I wasn't like, I have arrived. Like, you know, I've always been, like, a really anxious kid. I still am to this day. Like, I just, my mind just races a lot, right? And I will say, like, the first time, like, the effect of alcohol, like, I felt the produce affected by alcohol, like, that's what I felt, right? Like, my anxiety was gone. I could feel a sense of peace. I felt like I could talk to people. I felt like I was funny, you know, and I just felt like I had this huge weight lifted off my shoulders, right? Like, my chest was always so tight and heavy, and, like, I just always walked around like this, and I just could, like, relax. And just felt like this is where I was meant to be, you know? And I think, like, in the beginning, it's a lot of fun, right? And then you go through, like, that time where you just cross that invisible line, and all of a sudden it just becomes your lifestyle, right? Like, what I noticed from, like, after 2 years, you know, when I went to college, it was just like all of a sudden that path was just crossed, and I didn't care who I affected. I didn't care, like, what bridges I burned, and I didn't care, like, what was going to happen next, right? Like, it was just always about me. So my alcoholism really, like, I want to say, like, it, I it got worse, like, when I went to college, right? Like, I grew up with a strict dad, and when I got to college, it was, like, no rules, you know? And I was like, what is this? Like, I'm going to go crazy, right? I don't have a curfew anymore. Like, I don't live near home. I went to college in Gainesville, and I was just like, this is, like, it, you know? This is, like, how I'm going to actually, like, learn how to be an adult, right? So it started, like, pretty... like instantly, right? Like I wasn't necessarily up to that point where I was drinking every day, but every time I drank, I did not know like how much I was going to consume and like what was going to happen. And normally like very early on, it was like, I was either blacking out or I was like throwing up. Right. And most of the time when I threw up, it was either in like other people's cars or it was like when I was getting out of other people's cars. Right. Like, I think like on, I share this story a lot, but like on my, I want to say it was my 19th birthday, my birthday just happens to be on Earth Day, and, like, every year at UF, they have a fun run, and the dorm that I was staying in, that's where the fun run starts, so we have, like, a couple hundred people that are, like, standing outside the dorm, and, you know, like, my friend had took me to a bar for my birthday, like, she ditched me for a guy, I called one of my friends, and I asked him to come pick me up, I threw up all over his car, I threw up all over myself, and then when we got to the dorm, I had to walk through all those people, like, covered in throw up, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna go to bed, sleep this off, it's completely fine, you know, type thing, and, yeah, and I just, like, would proceed to go, right, but, like, my alcoholism really escalated when my parents told me, like, freshman year of college, like, my spring semester, that they were going to get divorced, right? And I basically, you know, never set any boundaries with them on any of, like, the things that they were feeling, and I just got caught in the middle real quick, you know? And they told me that, they would tell me things, right? Like, you need to tell your mom this, you need to tell your mom that, and I was just, like, the peacemaker, and I, from then on, like, I had decided, like, I don't want to feel, like, other people's feelings anymore. Like, this is too much. Like, emotions are too much for me. Like, I just want to drown myself. And that is, like, I think when the line switched for me, you know? I started showing up to classes, like, super drunk, or not showing up to classes at all. Like, I would have all these grand plans to do things, right? It was, like, I would... At first, it's like, go to school, like, go to the library, get your studies done and all of this stuff, and then you can drink. And then it started getting into, like, okay, like, well, I'll go to class, and then I can, like, drink in between class, and then, you know, then I can still, maybe I'll make time for homework afterwards, and then it would be, like, no, like, I'm going to actually choose to drink over, like, doing homework. And I started off at UF as an engineering major, and I quickly got put on academic probation because I couldn't pass, like, calculus or physics to save my life. So I was, like, failing 2 out of 4 classes each semester. So I got put on academic probation and had to switch my major 2 times, and towards the end, like, I just didn't care anymore because my heart wasn't in it. I met a guy while I was working who told me that, like, he is on probation for shoplifting $400 worth of jewelry from Macy's on Xanax. And I was like, oh, cool, you're really honest with me. Like, this could work, you know? And we broke up, obviously, because he couldn't do his community service hours. And then, like, the next person that I met and started dating was someone that I could get things from, right? Whether it would be, like, I could drink with them, I could buy things with, right? But, like, I always needed the source to be easy and convenient for me, you know? And, at, like, towards the end of school, like, that's just what happened, right? Like, I did not give a rat's ass about, like, if I was passing or not. A junior year of college, like, things just kind of took a toll on itself. I put myself into some bad situations, like, and I chose to kind of, like, you know, put alcohol and drugs before my feet, like, before anything else, right? Like, I would put, like, I basically would, like, hold hostages, right? Like, complain to my roommates about, like, all these things that I'm having trouble with and that I need help with school or I need help with working out or, like, whatever it is. And they would, like, give me solutions, and then I would choose to, like, drink over it, of course, and then would be like, no, I don't remember, like, complaining about that or, like, crying about those things. Like, I'm good now, you know? And of course there would be times, right, where, like, I'd wake up in strange places not knowing how I got there. And instead of being like, oh, maybe something needs to change, I would just be like, like, maybe I should not, like, put, like, this type of alcohol in my body instead. And, you know, all of those things. So it was never the drinking, right? It was always, it was always like the situation. Like, you know, it was always school. It was always my parents. It was always something else. When in reality, it was just like I had this phenomenon of craving and I didn't know how to stop it. You know, like whatever I put in my body, like I said, like I have no control what the outcome is going to be, how I'm going to act, where I'm going to end up, and when I'm going to stop. You know, so I made a firm resolution. I left college because I realized like it was toxic for me, right? Like I put myself in some situations towards the end of it. Like my boyfriend at the time like cheated on me with the roommate that I was supposed to live with. And like I told my roommates about it, who were three guys that I was living with at the time, and they proceeded to try to take advantage of me that night. And I realized like, okay, like this is pretty toxic, right? And like for the longest time, like I always blamed myself for those things, right? Like, oh, if I wasn't drunk, like that wouldn't have happened. And that's absolutely true. If I wasn't drunk, like that, none of those things would have happened, right? But like I chose to leave the situation. And when I got home, my brother with special needs had double pneumonia, was in the CCU. So like my mom basically begged me to come home and ask her to help. And so I was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to do school and I'm going to get a job and everything's going to be great, right? Immediately like ran into somebody that I knew who did the same things that I did and was just completely off to the races, right? And like things with her got very interesting. She just kind of like showed me all the shiny toys, right? Like how, like the lifestyle that she was living and how attractive it was in my opinion, right? Cause it's my perspective. And I wanted that, you know, and she would like pay for like concerts for us to go to and like lightning games. And like, she paid for skydiving tickets for us and all these things. And I was just like, how do you have all this money? You know? And she was just like, well, like, I'll tell you what I do, right? Like, I do something where, like, I cater to people's fetishes, and you're more than welcome to help if you want. We can, like, do this together. And I was like, bet, like, I'm down, right? Like, at this point, like, I had no care about self-worth, and I needed something to feed my drug and alcohol habit. So that's what I proceeded to do for, like the next 6 months to a year, right? Like, I made fast money. For me, right, like, I like hats are off to anybody who can do this stuff sober. You know, it can be really empowering for other people. But for me, I had to be really messed up to do these things, right? Like I would meet up with random guys like that I didn't know from Adam or Eve. They'd pay to fly me to like different places, right? And I would just like use their traumas against them to make money for myself, right? And like that's literally like how I spent my or got money for my habits. Like it got to the point where it was just like I was spending at least $1,000 a week on drugs and alcohol, you know. And like I didn't care who I hurt or what, right? Like my brother found out and he tried to blackmail me, and that didn't stop me, right? Like my boyfriend at the time found out, and I still found ways to like lie to him about those things and made him feel like he was crazy, because like I didn't want to own up to my stuff and I wasn't ready to like face any of the terms, right? Because I was like, well, I'm not harming me. Like, what's the issue with this, you know? Not realizing that like I'm affecting like so many other people in my life, you know? One day, like, I had an inkling to start, like, doing something else, right? Like, it got to a point where, like, alcohol wasn't doing enough for me. And I found out that, like, you know, I had, like, an inkling to do some, like, a craving for something else. And the first time I picked that up, like, I never stopped, right? And that just kind of, like, helped me keep alcohol in my system longer. And it helped me to, like, basically to, like, be fucked up for longer, if that, like, for a way of words. And like the first night I ever did that, I got like so messed up. My brother was like a suspect in an armed robbery. I remember like the police knocked on our door. My mom wasn't home, and I was talking to the cops, like loaded out of my mind, like trying to rat out like who the person was, that this person wasn't my brother. And I'm like really lucky I never got arrested, right? And so like, you know, me and my mom got into a fight. My dad told me to go to my grandma's house. I ended up bringing two friends, like got triggered by something, got so messed up that I ended up cutting myself that night. And like, you know, eventually, like a couple days later, went to the psych ward, voluntarily checked myself in, and like that wasn't enough for me to stop, right? Like, you make a firm resolution, I'm gonna stop for a couple weeks, like for a week or whatever, and then like I had no defense against the first drink and just went back to what I was doing, right? And like looking back at all these things, like I could see how God was in my life, you know, like I'm really lucky that I was never sex trafficked. I'm really lucky I was never kidnapped or a Dateline special. Like, I would just like put blind trust into other people thinking that like I'm invincible and nothing is going to happen to me, when in reality, like there was something out there, right, that had been watching me this entire time, you know? So when I got to AA, well, at first, I'll backtrack a little bit. Like, I was honest with my mom when I went to the psych ward about what I was doing. And, like, as, like, things progressed later on, like, she was able to catch on to it afterwards, because it got to the point where it was, like, any car ride that I had that was longer than 20 minutes, I needed to bring drugs and alcohol with me. You know, I would drink at stoplights and strategically place myself in between cars so no one would see. If I was going to, like, events that I knew I was going to be out there for a couple hours, I'd make sure this stuff was in my car. Like, I would have to portion and control my drinking to last throughout the night, so that when the stores opened again, I could be right there. You know, I would weigh 85 pounds. Like, I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. If I was eating, it was, like, the big boy breakfast at McDonald's, just to, like, get something over me. And I was just, like, the shell of a human being, right? So, like, my mom put me on lockdown because, you know, like, she took me to a psychiatrist because she thought I needed meds. And this is the person, too, that, like, I would lie and manipulate about, like, well, I'm not sleeping because I don't have enough of this, and, like, make her give money to me. You know, like, she was paying for my car payment, and I told her I didn't have any money while I was making money online and, like, buying things that I wanted. I was stealing money from her bag, like, when I was fiending and, like, craving alcohol, you know? And so, and she still wanted to help me. And so I got honest with the psychiatrist about like what, like how much money I was spending and like where I was making my money. And, you know, basically broke my mom's heart. And so my mom was, this guy was like, I can't help her. She needs rehab. Like, I'm sorry. Like, she's kind of too far gone. So my mom like put me on lockdown on Halloween night in 2018. And told me that I was going to rehab. And I had two options. I did not go to Turning Point because they wouldn't let me bring a straightener. So I went to a different rehab, and it was called Coalition Recovery. It's in Riverview. It's right next, I don't know if it's still there, but it was right next to the Dallas Bowl. And like, I felt so like safe there, you know? And like, my mom would call him every day, like saying that like, I'm lying, like I'm not gonna be honest, you know, like don't trust her type thing. Like, I had to be on supervised calls to like call my mom because we would yell at each other. But it taught me a lot about alcoholism, right? And like what I struggle with as an alcoholic. It wasn't 12-step based, but it was definitely something that I needed. And what I appreciated about it was that, like, the techs there, the therapists there, they were all in recovery. And that was what they instilled in my brain, right? Go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know? And I worked, like, a pretty thorough first step in there. And, you know, it was basically, like, you know, all the things, right? Write a story about, like, a timeline and, like, definitions of rationalism and all those things. And I will say, like, rehab was not enough for me to stay sober because I wasn't honest with myself the entire time that I was there, right? Like, I relapsed while I was in there, like, did not tell anybody. When I got out, I made, like, the first excuse to, like, go do something else, right, that affected me. And when I was deciding whether to go back to AA or whether to try AA or go back to rehab, like, my dad was kind of like, well, your aunt's in recovery. She has 7 years sober. Like, why don't you give this a try? So she brought me to my first week of meetings, and I was, like, I was scared out of my mind, right? Like, I really enjoyed it and liked where I was going, and, like, I found a sponsor within the first 4 days that kind of came up to me. I wasn't working, and that's what she said to me, right? She was like, do you have a job? And I was like, no. She's like, cool, I didn't work the first 6 months of my sobriety. And I was like, okay, like, something that we click on. So, like, I asked her to sponsor me, you know? And, like, the first week of meetings that, like, we went to, like, the first time it was ready for me to go by myself, like, I decided that, like, I could not imagine my life with alcohol and without alcohol, you know? And I was so scared to, like, put the next foot forward that, like, I went and, like, I picked up drugs and alcohol. Still went to the meeting because I told my aunt I would take a picture. And when I got there, someone from rehab walked in, and that also felt like a God moment, you know, and I was just like, I can't be here, you know, and left and went to a woman's meeting the next day and cried about it, right? Meanwhile, like, I still wasn't giving up the other thing that I had talked about earlier. And when I got honest about all of those things, I realized, like, if I want to give myself a chance, I have to absolutely do this 100%, right? I was told, like, 90 meetings in 90 days, which is not in the book, but, like, it's definitely something to help, like, form a habit, right? I was told to, like, call people. I was told to get a service position, right? And that's what really saved my butt in the beginning was, like, service work. I used to go to the Oldsmar group. That was my home group for a little bit. I'd go to their 9 a.m. meetings, and then on Tuesdays I'd go to both of their meetings, and I'd get off work and I'd get to that meeting early and I would do the coffee. I'd be there like an hour and a half early and like do the coffee. And that's how I got to know people, right? Like, I was still scared to call people on the phone, but like the things that I was not, were not able to give up. Like I just replaced like drugs and alcohol with other things. Right. And for me, that was men. It was really easy for me to like, not want to like look at myself. Like, I knew I didn't love myself. And, like, I distracted myself, right? Like, I wanted to still get a different type of high, but also still not, like, put something that's mind-altering in my body, you know? And that was, like, something that I struggled with for a few years, right? Like, my first sponsor fired me over that, and then I did. Like, I relapsed. I told nobody about it. And then March 17, 2020 was when I decided, like, to pick up my white chip with being honest about it. And I'd love to say that, like, I changed my life, right, and, like, all of this stuff, but I still went back to, like, all those bad behaviors that I was doing. I ended up getting kicked out of my mom's house because I was being selfish, and I moved into, like, a sober living house when I was 6 months sober, and I stayed there for 3 months, and then I got the opportunity to, like, become a companion and, like, do a living amends for my brother with special needs, because that was probably one of my lowest points was, like, drinking and using in front of him when he's very low functioning and he has like no understanding of what's going on. And like, I chose to like put him in that situation because I was craving something, you know? And it wasn't even like in my own home. And so like, I got the opportunity to work with him. And at this time I was working another job, and that was like the next high for me, right? Like, was just working like 60 to 80 hours a week and making money my higher power, you know? Like, I did the steps to the best of my ability, and I was working the steps, but there were, like, a lot of defects that I wasn't willing to let go of. And so what did God do? Like, I ran myself dry, and then I got long-haul COVID. And I had absolutely no one to call or do, like, I had no support system. I wasn't building my network because, like, my motives weren't, you know, good, like, right? Like, I have trust issues with women and all these things. And all I had was my sponsor, right? I called her every single day, but I was miserable. And I also, like, it made me reflect on, like, how much my program was working. Like, what's affecting me? What's not affecting me? What motives need to change? Where is God? You know, and all of those things. And I had realized, too, like, I thought I had a relationship with God, but I don't really think I did, right? Like, I prayed in the morning to help keep me sober, you know, and, like, I knew I had a connection with God, but I didn't know how to, like, continue to seek contact, right? And that's what I've always been told in AA, is that it is in the seeking, not in the finding, that you will find God, you know? And my God is always going to revolve, like, over time. But if I'm not making that connection, like, I'm not spiritually growing, you know? And this is a grow or go program, right? Like, a lot of the times it is kind of like, forget your feelings, you know, and just take the action. And that was that is still a pattern for me to this day, is like, I will sit in my shit and I don't want to take the action because like it says in the 12 and 12, like I like to get high off of my own depression, anxiety, you know, and it can be difficult. But like, as it was pointed out to me last week, like, where is the happy, joyous and free in that? Where is any of the freedom in any of those things, you know? But I have a high pain tolerance, you know, and like, pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. And I choose to suffer a lot. And, right, like, sometimes I do make fear my higher power. And, like, after COVID, you know, my sponsor moved to Orlando. Like, some things kind of happened in that situation where it was time for me to, like, move into a different direction. And like, I realized that like, I had never really felt any relief from like my first few fourth steps, right? Like I never got that like I had arrived moment. Like I thought I did it to the best of my ability. And the sponsor I had before this one, this was the third time I did the steps, and that was the first time I ever felt relief, right? That was the first time that I actually ever like looked at my defects and saw like what I struggle with, you know? And then when I have got the sponsor that I have now, like all of this now was like learning how to build this connection with God, you know? Dig deeper, right? I did like fourth steps on people, like specific people as well. You know, I've learned how important it is to like sit and reflect and do an inventory, how important it is to sit in the pause, you know? And like, the funny thing is that like life keeps getting harder, right? Like, because that's inevitable. Like life is just going to happen. But like the way that I learn how to handle it gets easier, if that makes sense. And that's not linear either, you know, like it can be like this, but a lot of the times it's like this. And like, I've learned that, like, I don't always have to go through something that I like gracefully, if that makes sense. But like other people will see that it is grace because of like the ability to give things like that I'm giving to myself. And that's probably also what saved my ass a lot these last couple of years, is like continuing to remain vulnerable and honest no matter how much it hurts me, right? And I have like, right, like, and I that is the one thing I'm not willing to let go of, is how vulnerable I am, whether it makes people uncomfortable, whether it makes me uncomfortable. Like I know that if I keep this stuff in my head, like I'm gonna go back to like my ideas, what I think is best, and just create some stories and assumptions, right? Like I'm just automatically going to assume like, oh, like this person looked at me this way. Oh, they're mad at me. They're going home and they're talking about this, like how, like, I gave them the wrong look and that they don't like me and all this stuff. When in reality, like all of that's alcoholism, right? Like alcoholism can look like anything. Like it can look like depression. It can look like anxiety. It can look like, obviously like fear and stuff. And, where I'm at right now in my sobriety is like I've been going through a lot of stages of grief, right? Like I'm grieving the loss of a pet, I'm grieving the loss of a grandparent, I'm grieving a loss of like my old identity, I'm grieving like old friendships, you know, and I'm starting to see like other defects that have come out in those situations, right? Because I might think that I'm over them, and then they come with these new masks and these new faces. And if there's anything I've learned after doing a fifth step and learning about 6 and 7, is that these defects are never going to go away. I can ask God to remove them all I want. If I need to in a situation when I'm uncomfortable, I absolutely 100% will. But it's just like the chicken pox. Like it's going to remain dormant forever, until like something triggers me, and then like it arises again, and that's okay, you know. But like what I need to work on, right, is like learning how to give myself the permission to feel those things, right? Like I think I'm at a point in my sobriety as well where like I'm ready to kind of dormant my people pleasing, right? Because I've noticed like how much I've started losing parts of myself. Because like in the beginning, it's all about, right, don't trust your thinking. Like you need direction. You need to be told what to do because your thinking got you here. Right. But now that I have like this God conscience and this like gut that I trust, doesn't mean that I'm not going to talk to my sponsor about what I'm going through, but it means that I can learn to trust myself more on like, if something doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. If something feels good, it feels good, you know? And then if I don't know what to do, like, I ask for the direction and help when I need that, you know? So, like, lately my emotions have just been too much for me to handle, you know? And last week, like, after YPG, I really, really wanted to drink. Like, I went home crying my eyes out. And, like, I'm so grateful for my friends, right? Because I got to that phase, right? I don't want to be in AA anymore. I don't want to do any of these things. Like, the fellowship sucks. Like, right? All these ideas that happen, right? When I choose to stay in situations that, like, longer than I need to be, right? And, like, I'm starting to see that, like, right? Like the longer I stay sober, the less I don't know, but the more like the fog lifts, right? Like I'm starting to see all of these things of like how this has been a continuous pattern in my life. And that there is no God in this. And I have been trying to rebuild my conception of what a higher power is, right? Because the God that I had when I got sober is not the God that I need now, right? My relationship needs to continue to get more and more intimate, you know? And like, if I want to stay in AA, I need to feel the same type of high that I had when I was out there, in my opinion, right? Because in the beginning, like that willingness, it was like, I would drive 45 minutes to go pick up drugs and alcohol. There's no excuse not to drive 45 minutes to go to a meeting or meet up with a sponsor or show up on time, build integrity, like have service commitments so that like I can have a purpose, right? And like all those things have saved me, right? Like doing detox meetings, being a part of Young People of AA and having like a position in there, like showing up for new people, taking people to rides, like all of those things have saved me. But like I can't replace that with God, if that makes sense. Like I also need to like invite God into every aspect of my life, and I fall short of that every single day, right? Like I don't wake up being like, oh, like what does God have in store for me? Or like when I'm anxious, I don't like ask God to be invited into the conversation or like my day or my life, right? And like, it always helps when you work with another alcoholic because God speaks to me through people. And, like, when I'm upset, like, I like to isolate. I like to withdraw. And, like, lately, like, that's something I haven't been allowing myself to do is isolate, right? And it is. It's really freaking uncomfortable. But, like, I don't want to feel the way that I felt on Thursday night, like, every single day, you know? Because it is inevitable that we're going to crave wanting to drink when our feelings are too much. It is inevitable that, like, we're going to go through phases where like things are stagnant and they ebb and flow. And like my relationship with God will be lukewarm. How do I make it warm again? How do I not continue it be lukewarm to the point where it gets cold? And I don't want it to get cold, you know? And like having these type of conversations and hearing God's words through people, but also sitting and reflecting about these things of like, what can I do better as a person to like be the person that God has wants me to be. Like that is definitely, it's hard, you know, but like if I don't give myself the time to like reflect and like look at the things that cause my self-harm, and speak up for when things bother me, like I will let my alcoholism win, right? Because my alcoholism is dormant right now. Like I'm not saved from this. Like, but it made me realize like this is a do or die program. Like I don't do this because I want to. I do this because I want to live, and I don't want to live the life that I did. I don't want to go back to like selling my body. Like I don't want to go back to like stealing from my parents and like stealing from my friends and having no one. Like I want to have friends. I want to be a woman of integrity. I want to have grace and dignity. Like I want to show up when I say I'm going to show up, and I want to help the next person, you know? And that is like the most beautiful gift, right? Like my sponsor always says God gets the most mileage out of everything. So like if I choose to sit in my shit, like I still never know like who I'm going to connect with, right? And there are some other people that like went through very similar situations as me when I had to put my 6-year-old cat down that like had to do the same thing a couple days later. And like that made me feel like I belonged, you know, and that I was right where I was meant to be. Same thing too with like grandparents passing and, you know, and it's like, I've also learned that like life can be beautiful and like broken at the same time, if that makes sense, and really messy. The worst day that I feel feelings, is not like my best day out there, if that makes sense. And the more that I stay sober, the more that I realize that drinking was never my problem, right? Drinking was always my solution. It's the way that I think and act and behave and all of those isms that come with it that, like, is the reason why I need to work a program, right? And that is why alcohol is only in the first step, in my opinion, right? Like, as long as I, like, have a willingness to, like, make a decision to seek something, like, I'm ready to do the rest of the steps to the best of my ability. And that's always going to, like, evolve, right? But, like, the steps help relieve the obsession to drink and use, like, that craving. But, like, I would be sitting here and lying if I didn't say that every once in a while. It's like, man, it would be nice to smoke a joint. Or, man, a nice cold beer sounds real good while I'm at the beach. you know? And I think that's normal because we are alcoholics, right? You can think about things, but it's the action that you take afterwards that like makes you the person that you are. And so like, I am very grateful today that I have a choice, right? I didn't have a choice at first. I was a slave and I was serving drugs and alcohol, and now I'm serving God. You know, and that is like the most beautiful thing like anyone could ever ask for. And like, because of that, my life is beyond my wildest dreams, right? Like I never, my life when I pictured it was always a black hole, right? Like I never saw a future. It's like now I just bought a house, which is really weird because I never thought I would be a homeowner. Like my credit score is good because I pay my credit on time. Like I have bills in my names, you know, like I have an animal that trusts me to take care of them. You know, they doesn't really have a choice, but you know what I mean? Like I have friends, like my relationships with my parents are great. Like, and that's not something that I would have ever pictured for my life. You know, I have a salaried job. Like, that's really cool, you know? And all of it is because, like, people in AA gave me chances or taught me how to live, you know? And so, for me, it's important to continue to give back and, like, show other people that this can be done and that they don't ever have to do it alone, because I didn't have to do it alone when I came here, and I have got vulnerable and honest. So, thank you.